no word of that occurred. A GO team from the National Transportation Safety Board is now leaving Washington for New York. It's the first treason charge against an American since World War II. A California grand jury returning the indictment today against a man who's accused of doing propaganda for Al-Qaeda. This is AP Radio News. President Bush says there's been a significant cut in the nation's budget deficit.
In 2004, I made a promise to the American people we would cut the federal budget deficit in half over 5 years. Today, I'm pleased to report that we have achieved this goal, and we've done it 3 years ahead of schedule.
A spokeswoman for the Democratic National Committee questions Bush's boasting about cutting the federal deficit in half.
He turned record surpluses into record deficits, so I'd hardly call that an accomplishment.
Stacy Paxton says the national debt has doubled on President Bush's watch. Recapping our story again, our top story, at least two people dead after a small plane plowed into a high-rise condo tower on Manhattan's Upper East Side. Sources say the plane was registered to Yankee pitcher Corey Lytle. The FBI and the Homeland Security Department says there was no evidence it was a terrorist attack. I'm Ross Simpson, AP Radio News.
This is AM 850 KFUO weather, mostly cloudy tonight with a low of 35, cooler on Thursday with clouds giving way to sunshine by the afternoon and a high of 50. Cloudy now, 57, hour two of Issues Etc. coming up at 5:05 on AM 850 KFUO.
Hi, this is Pastor Mark Hawkinson inviting you to the CPH Warehouse Sale on Saturday, November the 4th. I have the privilege of awarding four $50 gift certificates, good toward warehouse sale purchases. Now, the drawing will be at 7:45 a.m., and you do need to be present to win. It's one registration per person, and you can call AM 850 KFUO right now to register for the drawing. Call 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727, and I'll see you Saturday, November 4th at CPH.
By the way, are you a clock watcher? Thomas Edison, shortly after he opened his first factory, noticed that his employees were always watching the clock. Edison, a tireless worker, found that kind of attitude frustrating. Being an original thinker, he didn't say anything. Instead, he had dozens of clocks hung all around the plant. All of the clocks showed a different time, and clock watching became a thing of the past. It is important to be aware of the passage of time. After all, time will one day end. When your life is over, it's over. You can't bargain for another hour, minute, or second. Because humans are helpless in stopping time, we need to make the best use of every bit of it that God gives. This is By the Way.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're coming to you live this Wednesday. It's the 11th of October. Lively conversation with you in the last segment about that CNN story on Christian conservatives' dissatisfaction with the Republican Party. I mean, gauged from the dozen or so calls and email that we took in that last segment, it's running about 50-50. So, I don't know. I guess the only thing we can do is wait and see. We will know beyond a shadow of a doubt that this is down to a fine art form determining who our voters are and why they voted for what they voted. It's audio open lines. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our Issues Etc. book of the month for October is a children's book, and it's a picture book called The Apostles' Creed. Now, it contains the Apostles' Creed, both in the front and the back, but the story, and it is actually a story that you tell your children, beautifully illustrated, is a narrative way of explaining the three parts of the Apostles' Creed: God the Father, Creator; the Son, our Redeemer; the Holy Spirit, our Sanctifier. The book is $9.99 plus shipping and handling. You can find out more at our website, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org, or You can call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours. Call them tomorrow. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October called The Apostles' Creed. A great gift for your kids or your grandkids. 1-800-325-3040. Now, tomorrow on Issues, Etc., Sarin Foster of Feminists for Life is going to join us to talk about a pro-woman answer to pro-choice questions. We'll also continue our weekly series with Deaconess Pam Nielsen of Concordia Publishing House on teaching a Sunday school lesson tomorrow, Abraham Rescues Lot. That'll be the lesson for tomorrow. Now, next on Audio Open Lines, this is you don't hear about this very often, and maybe we should hear about it a little bit more. We hear about relief agencies, and we always tend to think Christian relief agencies. But believe it or not, there are actually Islamic aid organizations and even what we would call radical Islamic aid organizations. Here's a story from CBS about one of those radical Islamic aid organizations. It's offering relief to the victims of last year's earthquakes in Pakistan.
At first glance, you might think Pakistan's earthquake had rumbled through this valley just yesterday, instead of a year ago, when more than 70,000 men, women, and children died and thousands more were injured. The U.S. joined the world, racing to the rescue with emergency relief. But 12 months on, survivors in one of the worst-hit towns, Balakot, are still camping in the ruins. This valley, a so-called red zone, lies right on the fault. The government has said there will be no new construction, and the buildings that are here will be bulldozed.
There's a problem, though. The people haven't left, and they can't rebuild or move anywhere else without compensation. But the compensation is simply not flowing.
Not even local officials know whether it's red tape or corruption that's the problem.
Those who lost their houses completely are going to be entitled to money to rebuild the house and then move. Has this money been paid yet?
Not to the most of the people.
Instead, here's where many turn for help. To radical Islamic groups who stayed on with relief programs when much international aid ran out. Here's just one of several camps for the homeless set up by Jamaat ud-Dawa, a group now banned by Pakistan's President Musharraf for its links to terrorism. Dawa also runs a mobile hospital in Balakot with surgical units in shipping containers.
I thought that the Dawa was a banned organization, and yet it's operating openly.
Yes, but those who banned us have been here to see that we have nothing to do with terrorism.
1 year on, anger and religious fervor are growing. The ruined mosque is full. Islam is taking care of both the physical and spiritual needs of those left crushed by nature and neglected by their government. Elizabeth Palmer, CBS News, Northern Pakistan.
All right, now this is, I don't begrudge the Muslims in attempting to offer relief. These people, these victims of the earthquakes in Pakistan, people victim to other natural man-made disasters elsewhere, should be getting relief from every sector, from every corner, from every faith and creed. They should be. So I don't begrudge that. But I would really rather see the relief arriving to these Pakistani earthquake victims with crosses on it rather than the Islamic crescent. LCMS World Relief allows you to earmark a donation for the earthquake victims in Pakistan even a year after those earthquakes. And you heard about how bad it still is. You can find out more about Pastor Matt Harrison and LCMS World Relief by going to our homepage, issuesetc.org. You'll find the logo for LCMS World Relief right there. You can also call them and earmark that donation for the Pakistani earthquake victims, 1-888-930-4438. 1-888-930-4438. Now, we continue the theme of Islam during Audio Open Lines with this report. This has to do with a different country, a different continent. Now, Somalia, that was so much in the news a decade ago, Islam holds sway there, and Islamists in Somalia have announced jihad. This report comes from Reuters.
Somalia's powerful Islamists have declared a holy war against neighboring Ethiopia.
So Somalia's ancient enemy has returned, and therefore I give my order to the Islamic Courts' soldiers. We are calling you for jihad in Allah's way.
The declaration comes after the Islamists say Ethiopian troops sent by Somalia's government seized a town that had come under Islamist rule. Both Somalia's government and Ethiopia deny sending troops. Control of the town of Bur Hakaba would put the Islamists within 20 miles of the interim government's base. The Islamists already control large swaths of the country, flanking the interim capital. The group is unaccustomed to losing since their spectacular rise. Many Somalis view Ethiopia as a Christian imperialist power. Western governments fear that any incursion by Ethiopia could make Somalia the newest battleground of Islam against the West. Katie Jewell, Reuters.
Now, even though Ethiopia is not technically the West, it's viewed as the satellite of the West by the Islamists in Somalia. Here again, if I could just take the opportunity to point something out, we've pointed out so often here on Issues, etc. At the very least, this is true of radical Islam, and I would probably be willing to argue of Islam in general if it's consistent with the Quran and the Hadith, its holy writings. No distinction between church and state. We in the West tend to think about a declaration of war as something only a legitimate government can do, right? We are so accustomed to thinking this way. It's very deep in Western civilization. It's deep in the Christian perspective or worldview on Western civilization. We have a whole just war theory that pretty much prevails in the West. I mean, it was so much the subject of conversation 3 years ago when we started the war in Iraq. It is built upon the premise that there are people who can declare war, and then there are people who can't. I can't declare war. I cannot go into, let's say, if I'm invited to preach at a local church, I cannot go in and declare war on behalf of the people of the United States or on behalf of that congregation or even on behalf of myself. It's the first clause of the just war theory, the classical just war theory. There is no right authority. I don't have authority to do it. Now, the Christian worldview has always said, and this is the one that prevails in the West, duly established governments have the authority to declare war, and no one else. Now notice in Islam, where Islam holds sway, we didn't hear about the government of Somalia. It doesn't really have a government. It hasn't had a government for probably the better part of 20 years. But we didn't hear about the government such as it is declaring war against Ethiopia. No. It was the Islamists, whether they be clerics or individuals or militia leaders, not a duly appointed government. Now, you might say, oh, come on, that's Somalia. The place is in shambles. I would say that's more indicative of Islam than it is of just a country that is war-torn and falling apart with no permanent government. In Islam, the cleric can declare war. And however many people he can get to follow him will go to war with him. How many of the leaders of the various factions that fight one another in the West and America in Iraq are Islamic clerics? When there's no distinction between church and state, then our whole way of thinking about war, who declares it, who can declare it, no longer holds sway. This is a radical difference, not just between East and West, a radical difference between people who hold, either by accident or on purpose, a Christian-ish worldview and the worldview of Islam. Feel free to react to anything you hear during audio open lines. Our call-in number is 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Let's see what Monica has to say. She calls from Swansea. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Pastor. This isn't actually a war story. It's an individual story, but I think it's very related to what you're talking about. My daughter lives in Brussels, Belgium. She'll be there for the next 2 years, and she's going into a school that's tied to the EU. There's a lot of Muslims in Brussels, quite a few like there are in France, and they have a lot of problems there. The most recent thing she had to call us to tell us this had happened. She lives in a neighborhood, it's very segregated in Belgium and in Brussels, and she lives in a neighborhood that sits alongside a neighborhood that's mostly Muslims. Apparently, there's an illegal immigrant family from Afghanistan, and the Belgian government is trying to deport them. So the family went on a hunger strike, and then the local cleric led groups of men into the streets, and they burned cars and destroyed property, and they rioted. But in the meantime, there's a teenage boy in the family that after several days of hunger strike said, nuts to this, I'm eating. So the family called in the local cleric and his henchmen, and they sewed the kid's mouth shut. The government is helpless to do anything because of the rioting and because of the reaction, and they're all scared to death. So I just thought I'd share that as what's going on in another country, not just what we are facing, but what's going on, you know, around the world in individual countries.
Monica, thank you very much, and all the best to your daughter there in Belgium. Okay, there are those, like Uwe Simonetto, who's a regular guest on this program, who I've asked him this question more times than I can count. When we look at Europe and what people call the Islamization of Europe, the growing prevalence of Islam and radical Islam in European countries, not all of them, but many of them, Germany and Belgium and France, and especially Spain. Great Britain is also experiencing this to some degree. When we look at this, I've asked Uwe, are we looking at the possible future of all of the West? Given the fact that Muslims out-reproduce, is that even a word? Yeah, they reproduce at a higher level than Westerners do. Well, yes, the birth rate in the Western world is what? Barely, if it is, replacement. And in the Islamic world, it's a very robust birth rate, especially by comparison. Well, where will you go? You will emigrate. You will emigrate to Europe. You'll emigrate to the United States. I've asked Uwe, are we looking at the future of the United States? And he said, yeah, most likely. Now, here's the problem. Whether it's France and you have young, unemployed Muslim men who maybe just because they're bored and disaffected and disfranchised, decide to just tear up the streets on a regular basis, or whether they're actually driven by radical Islam and the ideas there, or this terrible story that Monica just told us out of Belgium that her daughter had relayed to her, where the government can't do anything. The government could come in and say, all right, we're going to jail this cleric and his henchmen, and then they'll have more riots. And they might be willing to deal with that. Sounds like they're not. Now, you ask the average citizen of Belgium, when did it get this bad? And they'll probably tell you, we didn't see it coming. It does come back to what I was saying before. We need to... Jane had called about this before, I think, one of the last callers on that issue of disaffection with the GOP. She said, well, look, at least the GOP sees the danger of Islam in the geopolitical sense. We need to see it in the local sense, too. I'm not saying every Muslim is going to sew someone's mouth shut when they break a hunger strike. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is there is an element of Islam. We're talking here about the clerics, their clergy, that is not unknown in the West. She wasn't talking about what happened in Iran or Saudi Arabia. She was talking about what happened in Belgium. Look it up on a map, right in the heart of Western Europe. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Thanks for the call, Monica. Here's another piece. This comes from CNN again. On the issue of Islam, since the story seems to be continuing, there's a British official who says that veiled Islamic women make community relations difficult. Here's the story.
A visible statement of separation and difference. Jack Straw's view on the veils worn by many Muslim women. Today, amid a barrage of criticism, he was not backing down.
I'm not saying that people should not be allowed to wear the veil. I respect people's religious decisions. But I'm concerned both about direct communication with people when they come to see me. I'm also concerned about the wider implications for race and religious relations, and I think it's important that this issue is actually put on the table.
Many claim that Jack Straw's comments are an attack on Islam. However, the Quran states that there's no compulsion in religion. Many take this to mean that faith should come from within and should not be forced. For cultural reasons, though, many Muslim women choose to wear the jilbab, a long flowing garment often accompanied by the hijab or headscarf. Others choose to wear the niqab, a veil attached to the hijab, leaving only the eyes showing. 31-year-old Anwara Begum is the kind of woman Jack Straw is referring to. She's covered her face for years.
I don't think we've had any problem with, you know, communicating with people because our face is covered. Because whoever knows us, it knows us anyway. And we are talking to you. Like, I've got my face covered, I'm still talking to you. So I don't think that there's any problem communicating with anybody.
If you were asked by Jack Straw to remove, would you?
No, I wouldn't. I don't know. I don't think so any other people would anyway.
So what of others in Jack Straw's constituency?
I think what he said is okay, and we should just cooperate with that.
I think lots of people want to ask the question, but they're not brave enough to do so.
And I think it's about time we got rid of Jack Straw. I don't see. I mean, everyone's got their right to say, obviously, as a person, but being especially a former Home Secretary, I think he's just making the situation worse.
One in four of Jack Straw's constituents is Muslim, and Britain's foreign policy was blamed for a fall in his majority at the last election. He knows as well as anyone the political risks of these comments. Emma Murphy, ITV News, Blackburn.
Well, I didn't mean for the two to relate in this way, but I had mentioned that in Great Britain, the growing Muslim population in certain sectors is becoming a political factor, and it certainly is. Even in something as I would consider it, they don't consider it trivial, but I would consider as trivial as how people dress as an expression of their religious convictions. So I want to hear from you. Do you think that in the United States, women who want to wear the complete, the full-blown garb of the Islamic woman, should they have to remove their headscarves? 5 minutes for your response. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now think about it for a moment. There are all forms of religious expression that come in how we dress or how we don't dress. For Christians, we generally speaking, Christians look in their apparel like everyone else. Generally speaking, they may dress more modestly, although my experience, not. Then you have someone like, say, the Hasidic Jew, who not only in their dress, but in the other way that they attire themselves, maybe a hat. When we were in Strasbourg this summer, we were in a largely Jewish section of the city. Strasbourg has a very high Jewish population because it was a free city in its history, and the Jews found basically refuge from general persecution there. So very thriving Jewish population. So there I walk out on the streets of Strasbourg in a free moments during Dr. Montgomery's Academy, and you don't have to be looking to see that you're in a Jewish community. The men are wearing the skull caps. Maybe they're wearing the hats. They've got the curled hair. They have the beards. They're dressed in black and white, largely. The women, you could have mistaken if you weren't paying attention for maybe an Amish woman, but unmistakably not the typical French-dressed woman there. And then, occasionally, a Muslim family. I saw several women in France who were dressed from head to toe in, I don't know what to call it because the names escape me, but from head to toe with only the eyes showing.
It's not a burqa, is it?
And they call it a burqa, I think. They call the whole thing the burqa, but they all have their own parts and there's different stages that they can wear. So, here in the United States, you don't see that so much. Should you? Steve calls from his car. Hi, Steve.
I have a question for you in this whole clothes thing.
Mm-hmm.
Consider this. One gets a driver's license, and so let's say it's a Muslim woman, and she wants to wear that. Well, a driver's license, it's a form of ID. How can you ID when you only see the eyes?
Okay, so you're talking about a picture on the driver's license.
Correct. So for the photograph. So the question is then, is are we infringing on their religious rights if we ask that no, you had to see the face? Because remember, a driver's license is not a right, it's a privilege.
Steve, thank you very much. That's a great question. Well, I want to hear from you. Okay, Steve raises the question. Very few minutes left here. Three now. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Very simply, the scenario that he lays out is because the driver's license is a privilege, every driver's license in every state has a picture on it of the person, a Muslim woman who wants to wear the entire burqa with only eyes showing. If we say to her, ma'am, you need to remove the headscarf and you need to remove the veil in front of your face so at the very least we can see if you hair color, eye color, and make sure that the picture matches up. Everybody else has to do it regardless of their religious affiliation. Should they argue that it's an infringement upon their religious expression? Someone certainly will at some time in the future, won't they? Here's Randy. He's calling from his car. Randy, welcome.
How you doing?
Very well.
I was just going to comment on that last caller's remarks. My understanding would be that the women that would go that far in adherence to their religious convictions, the Muslim women, probably would not have driver's licenses because I don't believe they're allowed to drive in the more extreme areas of the Muslim religion.
They may or may – I do not know whether they would or they would not. I think it would be hard to drive in a burqa. Let's see what Dale says when he calls from his car. Dale, welcome.
I have seen a lady driving in a burqa. There's a real safety issue there because if you can only see out the front, what about people on the side of you?
Dale, thank you very much. You know, there in some states you can't talk on your cell phone while you're driving your car. In some states you can't drive your car naked. Never tried, but... And someone who says, it's part of my religion. I drive naked. It's what I do. I'm not hurting anyone. The officer would say, no, you're going to drive with clothes on regardless of your religious beliefs. Well, these are the kind of issues. They seem small. They might even seem trivial, but these are kind of the issues that they face in Europe and that we will face here. And remember, for the devout Muslim, the burqa is not a matter of indifference. It's not a fashion statement. It's a religious statement. When we come back from this break, we got four more of the Anti-Amendment 2 ads to play for you, and we want your phone calls and your email voting for which of the four we're going to play for you is the most effective to the person who's sitting on the fence when it comes to Amendment 2 here in Missouri. Stay tuned.
Grace, faith, scripture, and Christ alone. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Well, the Trinity is impossible for an adult to believe as well as a child.
Dr. Jim Gimbel, author of our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for October, The Apostles' Creed, on teaching the Trinity to children.
But the things that God does, the three persons of the Trinity, each involved a little bit differently, are visible to us. And this follows Martin Luther, who was a significant figure for saying we need to try and do what we can to make the teachings of God understandable to people of all ages. Not dumb down the doctrine, but make it understandable for a child to learn and be able to better comprehend the succinct way that the creed explains things. It's an explanation of the creed using concepts that are very familiar to children.
Find the Apostles' Creed at our website, issuesetc.org, or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040.
Think about it. Death before sin?
Answers with Ken Ham, one of the authors of the new book, War of the Worldviews. Ken, some Christians claim that when Adam sinned, he only died spiritually. They say that physical death already existed in the world. How do you answer that?
Well, Mark, the reason some Christians say that sin only brought spiritual death is because they believe in an earth that's millions of years old. They've been influenced by secular scientists to think this way. You see, if a Christian believes in evolution and millions of years, then death was already in the world millions of years before Adam sinned. Thus, they say that Adam's sin resulted in spiritual death, just separation from God. But in Genesis 3, we read that because of sin, God told Adam that he would now return to the dust from which he was made. This is definitely referring to physical death. Also, in the book of Romans, the Apostle Paul compares the death of the first Adam to the death of the last Adam, Jesus Christ. Now, we know that Jesus died physically on the cross. If Adam's death was only spiritual, then this comparison Paul makes doesn't make any sense at all. No, Adam's sin resulted in both spiritual and physical death. The Bible makes it clear there was no human or animal death before sin, and the earth's not millions of years old.
When you accept the Bible as true history, you'll recognize that the earth is not millions or billions of years old. That's explained in Ken Ham's free booklet, The Seven Seas of History. You can find it on our website, AnswersRadio.com.
The Christ-centered programs you hear every day on AM 850 KFUO are made possible by the generous giving of friends like Ruth Lures of Brazos, Missouri, Pat and Terry Rosenberg of Virginis, Illinois, and Trudy McLeese of St. Louis. Thank you. Your faithful support of AM 850 KFUO ensures the future of our radio outreach.
Mrs. Feeney!
Yes?
Congratulations! You've just won a lifetime supply of road flares! How do you feel?
What? I thought that sweepstakes was for cash!
Sometimes we just don't get what we hope for. But one thing you can count on is straight answers and solid advice from Dr. James Dobson on Focus on the Family. It's a winner!
Weekdays at 9:30 on AM 850 KFUO.
Your family is invited to come to the Emerson Children's Zoo at the St. Louis Zoo for a story time that goes beyond what is found in any library. Each Thursday morning at 10:30 a.m. in October and November, keepers will read a different story and give visitors an opportunity to meet an animal that was featured in the book and make a craft to take home. For more information, visit stlzoo.org. Stories come to life at the St. Louis Zoo's Storybook Safari.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. A couple phone calls to pick up here from our conversation before the break, and then we're going to be asking you to choose your favorite commercial being run by Missourians Against Human Cloning, warning people about the deception of Amendment 2. Got four more to play. I'm going to pick one that is you think is the most effective, and then it'll go into the hopper for next week. We'll get our four best together and put them head to head. Let's talk with Shane in Imperial. Hi, Shane.
Greetings. Hi. Regarding the burqa and the driver's license issue, Bill O'Reilly has actually done some news coverages about Florida allowing the driver's license photo allowing the woman to have a full hijab or the full head covering. And for one of the guys we recently interviewed on the White Horse Inn, Sam Solomon, just recently told us that there are actually 9 states in the country currently who are allowing that particular identification.
And 9 states in the United States?
That's what he said, 9 states. I have not followed up, but that was his claim, and he studied the issue. He is a Muslim scholar and 15 years served as a jurist in the teaching Islamic jurisprudence. So
well, then I would assume that he would know. That's Shane Rosenthal. He was a guest yesterday on Issues Etc. He's producer of the White Horse Inn radio program. Thanks, Shane, for listening and for the call. Yeah, because Steve raised the question before we went to the break. He seems to have that kind of prophetic nature to some of his thoughts. Florence calling from Georgetown, California. Hi, Florence.
Hi, Pastor Wilkins. I had a question and a comment. First of all, it seems like for their own protection, having their own photo on their photo ID would be to their advantage. And, because of ID theft and things, I realize the religious issue. And the other thing that occurred to me while you were talking is, isn't there some historical precedent where we live, there's a convent right outside of town, and the nuns, I see them driving cars all the time, and they always have a head covering. And, I realize they don't cover their faces, but I guess I would imagine that when they go in for their photo for their driver's license, they don't have to take their headdress off, do they?
I don't know. See, I wear a baseball cap pretty much 24/7, except for today because I'm actually wearing a tie, and it just looks terrible. I don't look like Ron Howard. But I'm looking at my photo ID. Thank you very much for the call, Florence. I'm looking at my photo ID on my driver's license, and I know for a fact, I'm unshaven. I probably just rolled out of bed when I went for this thing, and I know I just am just as sure as I can be that this day I was wearing a baseball cap, but it's not in the picture. My bald head is in the picture. They told me to take off my hat. They did, because I go everywhere with a baseball cap on my head. I'm I'm an idiot that way. And so when I went in this day to get my picture taken for my driver's license, the lady probably said, you have to have the cap off. I wonder if I would have walked in a burqa, whether I would have had to have taken it off. Now, it's again, it seems like a small thing. But it's, in some ways, the tip of the iceberg. 505-780-1800-730-2727. Charlie, we ready to go with that first commercial, the fourth to last cut there in the CD? We're going to play four of the Anti-Amendment 2 commercials. There are about 16 in all. We're going to play four of them. This is the second group of four. We played four yesterday and got your favorite, which was Doctor and Patient. We're going to play four others, and we're going to ask you which of these, in your opinion, is the most effective, especially the most effective, in convincing the person who's sitting on the fence when it comes to Amendment 2. The first one comes from Barbara Quigley, director of the St. Louis Center for Bioethics and Culture.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
This is Barbara Quigley, director of the St. Louis Center for Bioethics and Culture. Amendment 2 poses health risks to young women who must supply the eggs for embryonic stem cell research. Risks like ovarian cysts, blood clots, difficulty breathing, kidney failure, and in rare cases, death. Join me in protecting young women. Vote no on Amendment 2.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, that's the first one. These public service announcements are running all throughout Missouri, and what we're asking here for you to do is listen to each one of these four and tell us which do you think is most effective. That means you really do have to listen to what they're saying, because each of them takes a little bit different angle on trying to convince people to vote no on Amendment 2. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. The second PSA comes from Haven Howard. She's Area Director of Concerned Women for America.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
This is Haven Howard with Concerned Women for America of Missouri. Even though 89% of Missourians oppose human cloning, they will easily be deceived by the wording of Amendment 2. Know the facts. Amendment 2 will enshrine human cloning in the Missouri Constitution and allocate your tax dollars to pay for it. To protect human life, you must vote no on Amendment 2.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, that's number two. Do you think it's the most effective? 505-7850-1800-730-2727. The next one comes from Dr. Richard Cole. He's been a guest on this program several times. He's department chair at Washington University's School of Medicine.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
I am Dr. Richard Cole, department chairman at Washington University School of Medicine. Amendment 2 would allow cloning of living human embryos by a process called SDNT. The National Academies of Science, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and others clearly state that SDNT is cloning. This is the same process that cloned Dolly the sheep. I urge you to vote no on Amendment 2.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
Now, the theme of these, of course, is common because they're talking about another voice. These are the voices against human cloning from Missouri. We got one more to play from you, and then I want to hear from you which of these four that we're playing for you today is, in your opinion, the most effective. And when you call or you email us, tell us why. IssuesETC@KFUO.org, or our call-in numbers 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. If you're an undecided voter, which one of these public service announcements on Amendment 2 would be the most effective in convincing you to vote no on that amendment? Here's the final one. It comes from Cindy Province. She's a registered nurse.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
This is Cindy Province. Powerful business interests want to hijack the Missouri Constitution by passing Amendment 2, which would allow human cloning and would even prevent our elected officials from ever banning human cloning. They're trying to deceive us with misleading language, but don't be fooled. Patients with injuries and illnesses need real hope, not misleading hype.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, yesterday you chose Doctor and Patient, which was the first one we played yesterday in our single elimination tournament. What we're trying to get to is midweek next week, we're going to be able to play the four that emerge from these 4 days in the first round and put them up against one another. And at the end, according to how you vote on this, say which one you think is the most effective ad being run by Missourians against human cloning, against Amendment 2. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We'll have that final four a week from today on Issues Etc. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Now, if you chimed in yesterday with your opinion on the first four we played, feel free to chime in again today on the next four. It's a whole new round of voting on these public service announcements aimed at convincing people to vote no on Amendment 2. Which is the most effective and why? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, and email us at issuesetc@kfuo.org. Tomorrow on the program, pro-woman answers to pro-choice questions. Sarah Foster of Feminists for Life will be our guest. Deaconess Pam Nielsen will also join us tomorrow on the program, teaching a Sunday school lesson. Our continuing series will go to the lesson of Abraham rescuing Lot. That's tomorrow on the program. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Now, yesterday, when we were playing the first four, if I remember correctly, those who were voting for the first one said, look, it gave basic information. Doctor and Patient gave basic information. It was a little vignette. It was a little play, that public service announcement, that simply had a woman talking to her doctor about how he was going to vote on Amendment 2 and why. Now, you got four different ones today. Which of these do you think is the most effective? Let's run through them again. Listen carefully and give us a call, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Is it Barbara Quigley, who is the director of St. Louis Center for Bioethics and Culture? Is it Haven Howard, who is the area director of Concerned Women for America? Is it Dr. Richard Cole, who's the department chair at Washington University School of Medicine? He says, look, if you just go to the textbooks, and he should know, cloning is cloning is cloning. Or is it Cindy Province, an RN, who's concerned about the money end of Amendment 2? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo. Here's the first one again, Barbara Quigley, director of the St. Louis Center for Bioethics and Culture.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
This is Barbara Quigley, director of the St. Louis Center for Bioethics and Culture. Amendment 2 poses health risks to young women who must supply the eggs for embryonic stem cell research. Risks like ovarian cysts, blood clots, difficulty breathing, kidney failure, and in rare cases, death. Join me in protecting young women. Vote no on Amendment 2.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, would that public service announcement make a difference to you if you were undecided on Amendment 2? She highlights the risks of egg donation and the risks to young women, who will be, by and large, the people donating eggs to embryonic stem cell research, if it actually is upheld by Amendment 2 in Missouri. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org. The next one comes from Haven Howard. She's area director of Concerned Women for America. She takes this angle on Amendment 2.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
This is Haven Howard with Concerned Women for America of Missouri. Even though 89% of Missourians oppose human cloning, they will easily be deceived by the wording of Amendment 2. Know the facts. Amendment 2 will enshrine human cloning in the Missouri Constitution and allocate your tax dollars to pay for it. To protect human life, you must vote no on Amendment 2.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
Now, the differences between these four may be a little more subtle, but her angle was, look, you might think you're banning human cloning by voting for Amendment 2 because the advocates are telling you it bans human cloning, but you're wrong. You actually would be enshrining human cloning for destructive biomedical research, and you won't be banning human cloning at all. kind of goes to the biggest issue that I think many people have had with the proponents of Amendment 2. They're simply not telling the truth when it comes to that ban on human cloning. It's a clone and kill amendment to the Missouri Constitution. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I do not want to have to ask Jeff to vote. I don't. So I want to hear from you. Issuesetc@kfuo.org. The third one is from Dr. Richard Cole, a guest on this program, director of the chair of the Washington University School of Medicine. Here's his particular take on Amendment 2.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
I'm Dr. Richard Cole, department chairman at Washington University School of Medicine. Amendment 2 would allow cloning of living human embryos by a process called SDNT. The National Academies of Science, the American Association for the Advancement of Science, and others clearly state that SDNT is cloning. This is the same process that cloned Dolly the sheep. I urge you to vote no on Amendment 2.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
All right, that's number three. I want to hear from you, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Let's play number four, and then we'll go to the phones. This one comes from Cindy Province, who's a registered nurse.
Here's another voice against human cloning.
This is Cindy Province. Powerful business interests want to hijack the Missouri Constitution by passing Amendment 2, which would allow human cloning and would even prevent our elected officials from ever banning human cloning. They're trying to deceive us with misleading language, but don't be fooled. Patients with injuries and illnesses need real hope, not misleading hype.
If you're against human cloning, you're against Amendment 2. Protect life. Vote no in November.
And her point there is that if the constitutional amendment passes with Amendment 2 in Missouri, lawmakers, even if they want to ban human cloning in the future, they won't be able to because it will be unconstitutional on the face of it. So is it number one, Barbara Quigley, talking about the risk of egg donation? Is it number two, Howard Haven, talking about the deceptive wording in Amendment 2, that it won't ban human cloning at all? Is it number three, Dr. Richard Cole? He simply points out that somatic cell nuclear transfer, whatever you call it, it's still cloning. Or is it number four, Cindy Province, a registered nurse, concerned about the hijacking of the Missouri Constitution and tying the hands of Missouri lawmakers when it comes to cloning for the future? Our in-studio email address, which is the most effective and why? Let's go to the phones. We've got 10 minutes left for your votes. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. That in-studio email address issue, ztc@kfuo.org. I'm Todd Wilkin, and we are coming to you live this Wednesday, October the 10th. Small time to vote, a lot of calls to get to. First, to Carolyn in Bellefontaine Neighbors. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi, Todd. I think the efficacy of each of them depends on the particular persuasion of the hearer, because some of them appeal to certainly different aspects of the bill.
True.
Yeah, and pragmatically, I think the last one regarding the effect it'll have on the Constitution would be perhaps more effective with people in outstate who are looking to protect our Constitution.
Okay, Carol.
The next question I have, why are you doing this? What effect do you expect to have from this?
What effect do I expect to have?
Well, yeah, why are we voting on this? Are you going to be able to make any suggestions to anybody about it, or is there just...
I'll tell you why I'm doing it.
Okay.
Carolyn, thank you very much. I get to the phone calls real quick. The reason I'm doing it is, number one, I'm interested in what would sway the person who is sitting on the fence when it comes to Amendment 2, and you're the best way to discover that, to ask you which you think is most effective. I could have my opinion, but I'd rather ask you. And the other reason is, I want these ads to be heard. I'll be completely honest with you. Dale's calling from his car. Hi, Dale.
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well.
My choice would be number three. And I'm firmly against human cloning, but I think that one would attract attention because it's unique in that it references Dolly the sheep, and because it has that personal attachment to it, that people have heard of that. They haven't heard of all the technical views,
mm-hmm.
but they've heard of that. They would be able to draw a conclusion whether or not they want to side for or against.
All right, Dale, thank you very much. No wrong answers here, but good thinking, Dale, because you're thinking about, like, the person who is approaching this from kind of the fence-sitting position, still undecided as to what they're going to do. Here's Jim, who calls from his car. Hi, Jim.
Todd, how are you?
Very well.
Number four, because that's the one that is moving the people that were yes or were undecided, moving them into the no column. The idea that it affects our Constitution and puts forth a blank check for the biotech industry.
All right, thank you very much. That seems to be kind of the bottom line concern, is don't mess with the Constitution. What about the rest of you? A few minutes here left to vote. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Ann's calling from Crestwood. Hi, Ann.
Hi, Todd. I like number one and number three, but number one, in talking about women's eggs and such, I think that would touch women who are pro-choice. They might look into that. I've never heard that information before. I've heard a lot about the cloning. And then the number three, the doctor from Washington University. I think a doctor from Washington University speaks with clout.
Okay, so which is it going to be, one or three?
It's number one, and then my second favorite's number three.
All right, thank you very much, Ann. You can do that, too. You can pick a first and a second, but you only get one vote. So that's one vote for the first one, Barbara Quigley, on the risk of egg donation. She thinks that's effective. There's one vote for number three, Dr. Richard Cole, referencing Dolly the sheep, saying, look, somatic cell nuclear transfer is cloning. And two votes for number four, Cindy Province, a registered nurse, concerned about the hijacking of the Missouri Constitution, and it would tie the hands of Missouri lawmakers to ever ban human cloning in Missouri, unless, of course, you have another constitutional amendment, which states are not quick to do, even when they've made a mistake. I want to hear from the rest of you. 5 minutes to vote. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Paul writes this, my wife works with some of the doctors who are pro-Amendment 2, but their rationale is purely Greco-Roman. Embryonic stem cell research is business. Many of the researchers know that they're just having their fun and don't care about the finite resources available for medical research. So did he say he was voting for number two? Is that correct? All right, then that's one vote for number one, one for two, one for three, and number four's got two votes. Let's see what Bruce has to say, calling from his car. Hi, Bruce.
Hi, Todd. I think I like number three because I think it's Dr. Cole, is it?
Yes.
He made the point that SCNT is cloning, and I think it kind of puts a lie to the propaganda that we've been getting when various sources have come out and said it is not cloning. So I think that would cause somebody to think, well wait a second, I thought it wasn't cloning. And maybe that would get their attention.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. And it's coming from a department chair at Washington School of Medicine. By the way, many of the supporters for Amendment 2 also serve on the faculty of the Washington University School of Medicine. So you do have responding voices from the same prestigious institution. So who's going to break the tie between number three, Dr. Richard Cole, and the fact that SCNT is cloning, or number four, Cindy Province, the registered nurse, on the hijacking of the, how Amendment 2 would hijack the Missouri Constitution? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Don't let Jeff break the tie. He's notoriously unfair. He is. Sometimes he votes some ways just to spite me, I think. So don't let Jeff break the tie. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Really am simply interested in, first of all, the message of these ads getting out, but the value of the message. You know, they spend a lot of money with some very bright people to get these messages put together. And I'm basically interested which one is the most effective if you're sitting on the fence and undecided on Amendment 2. Let's go very quickly to the rest of these phone calls. Karen calls from her car. Hi, Karen.
Hi, thanks for having me. I really want to go with Dr. Cole. He's using logic. He's very precise. The one mentions funds, and they haven't actually asked for any yet, so that can look like we're playing scare tactics.
Okay, that's good. That's good. You don't want to overstate your case. Thank you very much. Paul's on the line. Paul, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thank you. I wanted to vote for Dr. Cole, number three. I think that
you had mentioned that there are other voices from Washington University, and it's a preponderance of folks that are supporting that from that organization. And to hear somebody coming against it from there, I think speaks to his fortitude and direction.
Well, quite,
and I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with Dale previously about the fact that the Dolly cloning reference brings it to home for a lot of people. It's very something that they know a lot about and have heard about. So to tie it into that makes it to the average individual.
Okay, Paul, thank you very much. Good. They're agreeing with one another. What does Jane have to say when she calls from her car?
Hi, I'm for Cindy Province, only because I have been doing this with people, and by bringing that fact in, people that aren't not necessarily Christians or pro-life, they kind of just dismiss me, and then, but when I bring this thing in, they're listening.
Okay, thank you, Jane. So Jane's tried the Cindy Province argument, which is, do we really want to change our Constitution and make it impossible for lawmakers to ban human cloning? A very left-hand argument, secular argument. Those tend to be pretty strong. All right, that's it. Let's see, who did win? It was Dr. Richard Cole, number three. His reference to Dolly, kind of lowest common denominator. Most people know Dolly the sheep. And saying, look, it's the same kind of cloning that we used to get Dolly that they're proposing that we use to produce human embryos and take their stem cells, thus destroying the embryos. It's the same process. All right, so Dr. Richard Cole is going to go into the slot for this day, and then a week from today, we're going to bring our final four together, and he's going to advance next Wednesday's final four, and we're going to let you decide 1 week from today which of those four is the most effective ad from the Missouri Coalition, I'm sorry, from the Missourians Against Human Cloning. We'll be playing four more of those public service announcements tomorrow between 5:30 and 6 here on Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our address is 85 Founders Lane, St. Louis, Missouri, 63105. You can donate by credit card on our resource line, 1-800-737-0172. 1-800-737-0172. For a free audio copy of this hour of Issues Etc., please visit the audio archive section at KFUO.org. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of AM850 KFUO. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.